Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land Podcast. Shout out to our friends at Euro Fantasy Game. I'm going to be writing a couple of columns before the end of the week for them. You can read other works from frequent guests from the podcast there as well. So today we are going to focus a lot on what we saw in the Champions League. Overall, a very good week for Serie A teams, I would say. We're going to do some game predictions with our friend Thousand Names. I was trying to bring him on the air with us. We haven't had him on for a while, but he has another conflict. But joined by our great friend Alex Goldberg, our co-host, producer. His YouTube channel is blowing up. We actually got a very good question for the podcast off one of Alex's videos, so I'm looking forward to chatting about that. But before we get to all that, Alex, let's talk a little bit about what we saw in the Champions League. And I'm going to ask you this. What did you find more impressive, the fact that Juve won at Old Trafford or Napoli's almost win in Paris that ended up being a draw? What stood out to you more?
Well, David, if Mario Rui had just closed down the ball a little bit better and Di Maria didn't have that golazo, I would certainly say Napoli, because that would have been 3 points against PSG. But I am still going to say I was more impressed by Napoli's draw against PSG rather than Juve's 1-0 win at Old Trafford. And David, that really just comes down to the fact that I knew Juventus had this. We don't have to be fortune tellers here. I said Juventus were going to win comfortably, and I didn't necessarily mean by the score, but I did probably think they were going to win by two, not one. But still, it was a comfortable 1-0 victory. I thought they certainly dominated the first half. Manchester United rebounded a little bit better in the second half, but I don't know, watching all 90 minutes there, at no point did I ever really think Manchester United are going to take a point away. So if I already had that expectation going into the tie, then I really shouldn't be that impressed that Juve got the win. Now, I understand I'm kind of grading this on a curve. I'm grading Juventus on their standard, but hey, that's the standard that they have set for a long time now. So that was almost just business as usual to me, them getting that victory. Napoli are just, they're impressing me. They're flat out impressing me. Now, I will say a little caveat here. PSG are not impressing me. PSG look the furthest thing from a team. I've talked about this a lot so far that I thought Gigi Buffon would kind of bring maybe what PSG were missing, that team leadership, so much experience, such a great leader. I thought they would gel together a little bit more. Maybe they will further down the season, but nonetheless, PSG haven't been that impressive. But still, Napoli are getting points that I honestly did not see them getting. Now, I still thought Napoli were going to be okay compared to some others, but still, David, I feel like Napoli are getting better and better each week. I know Ancelotti would have loved to have all 3 points, but still, that was a good performance. You get Insigne back from injury and immediately has a goal. I'm once again impressed by Napoli, David. So that's my take. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think, look, it says a lot about Juve. I don't know. I guess it also says something about Manchester United that we weren't really surprised by that dominating performance. You know, I tweeted it. I mean, this Juve in the Champions League just looks like a completely different beast than we've seen in the past. You know, I said it right away, like the Ronaldo signing, like there's going to be no match that they don't walk onto the pitch thinking that they are the favorites and they can win it. So definitely. So on the other hand, I'm with you. Napoli has really, really impressed me. I tweeted this as well yesterday. I think it's because I really love Sarri so much that I was really down on Napoli. I talked about how I could see we see this in the NFL. The team that loses the Super Bowl typically doesn't do well the following season. And I thought Napoli was going to have a huge hangover. And that has not been the case at all. To me, Ancelotti, in a lot of ways, we're seeing what Allegri did at Juve. One of the takes that a lot of people that I've had that bring up to me is like, you know, that I brought up the fact that Conte took Juve from A to B. And Allegri's a coach that takes you from B to C. And I think we're seeing a lot of the same with Ancelotti. And interestingly, both Allegri and Ancelotti, how they're taking the team to a next level is mainly in European competitions. Allegri arrived at Juve right away and he said, we're going to be a consistent top 8 team in the Champions League. And that's that. And now the bar's been raised even more. last year, and I really don't think this was a Sarri decision. I think this was a decision that was made above him. Napoli went all in for the Scudetto and in a lot of ways punted the other competitions. With Ancelotti, that has not been the case. Ancelotti, you know, he said it in a recent interview that, look, you know, Sarri left him a great base, but he wanted to make Napoli more confident, courageous, and Napoli be more, you know, confident in their ability. And we're seeing it that, you know, Napoli under Sarri, if they fell behind, there really wasn't many adjustments. Sarri does what Sarri does really, really well. Ancelotti has definitely changed that. So I was very impressed. I thought that performance yesterday cemented even more the mea culpa that I have on underestimating Napoli going into the season. So really an impressive performance there. I think if you're a Napoli fan, you have to be thrilled about that. So, you know, another thing that I've been thinking a lot about after watching these performances, I have to ask you this, Alex. Let's take age off the table. So let's not really make it, you know, long-term, how long a player can stay, or even say the fit on Chelsea or any other team. But if you could have just one player between Koulibaly and Chiellini as they are right now, who would it be and why?
Oh, man, that one is so tough. So tough. Now, just the way I feel about Koulibaly, like, he's one of my favorite defenders. So I want to just say Koulibaly. But I feel like answering it too quickly is totally slighting Chiellini, who has had a miraculous career, has been a top defender, not just a product of Juventus's great defense and team. No, he's been a great individual defender for quite some time. So it really is tough for me. If anything, if I'm going to grade them out as even on ability or just who would I trust for one game, one season, since you're saying don't take age into the equation, based on ability, if I'm going to say they're tied, maybe the tiebreaker will be trophies, honors, who's played in bigger games. And that would obviously be Chiellini. But David, with that said, since it really, you're not asking me to do that. You're just saying take age out of the equation. And, you know, I can take him for a game. I can take him for a season. Just right now, who do I want? Ah, I just have to go Koulibaly, David. I feel like Koulibaly, if Koulibaly is Koulibaly, he is... No, I'm really serious in saying this. He's a top three defender in the world currently, if Koulibaly's Koulibaly. I know about Sergio Ramos. I know about Mats Hummels. But you can't tell me two other players, two other defenders that you would take over Koulibaly. Right now, I just think Koulibaly is a top three center back. I really do. Probably number three. But still, that's a huge accolade. So I'm going to have to say Koulibaly, but by a smidge, because you give me Chiellini blindfolded and I'm still happy with what I have, but I have to go Koulibaly by a hair, David. That's my answer. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love thinking of these questions, and I got to say this one is really, really tough. I think the only one that was as tough for me, it wasn't even a culture one. It was deciding on Eddie Vedder versus Thom Yorke. Like, you, there's really no wrong answer. So the way I see it, to me, Chiellini is like a dying breed. He is an old school defender, came up in the man marking kind of style, just an absolute beast. I think, you know, one-on-one defender, you know, would go in probably as good as it gets there. I see Koulibaly as more modern defender, and I think Sarri had a big impact on him. Koulibaly himself has said that when Sarri replaced Benitez, and let's give credit to Benitez, he's the one that discovered Koulibaly, you know, he really improved his passing from the back, made him like a better positioning. So it's really, really tough. Our friend Kubani, who we've had on multiple times about Napoli this morning, tweeted, and it was a really interesting take. He said that then Koulibaly is Napoli's best player since Maradona. And that really made me pause to think. I was like, man, that's an interesting question. Now, Napoli, you know, Maradona left in 91. Napoli had a lot of up and down years. They went in the second division. They went bankrupt. But since De Laurentiis took over, Napoli has had some good players. There's no team in Serie A that has more consecutive European appearances than Napoli. Not Juve, definitely not Milan, not Inter. It's them. And when I think of the great players they've had, they had Cavani, who was really sensational for Napoli. Of course, Hamsik, definitely the most, you know, when you look at longevity, make a great case. Higuain's season with Sarri, I used to say he's the best player in Serie A, not just the best striker. So you can make a great case, but you can make a great case for Koulibaly as well. I feel like in these types of debates, it's hard to look at players at different positions, but defenders, it's easy to not probably give them the credit that they deserve. So it's right there. So at the end of the day, I think Koulibaly makes a bigger impact for Napoli, and that I think says more about the rest of the squad. Chiellini, I'm just going to give him a very slight edge. I thought that performance at Old Trafford was just great for Chiellini. We have a question on his, where he ranks historically, so I won't step on that one. So I'm going to, as much as I love Koulibaly, I'm going to have a very slight edge to Chiellini. Also, I look at how well the people that have played next to him, Bonucci knows how to revival. And look, he's been responsible on a lot of goals, but Bonucci was pretty sensational at Old Trafford there. So I'm going to give Chiellini a very slight edge. But again, in the modern world, if you said Koulibaly, I'd really have no argument. I would totally see why.
Yeah, for me, if I'm ranking the center backs right now, I'm saying Sergio Ramos, one. I'm saying Diego Godin from Atletico Madrid, two. And then I'll put Koulibaly, three, or Mats Hummels, three. That's how highly I think of Koulibaly right now. So, David, we obviously had football midweek, Champions League, of course. So let's get to a rare Thursday edition of Winners and Losers.
So, look, overall, it was a great stretch for Serie A. I think for Inter, despite Messi not playing, they had Nainggolan out. This was a huge stage for them. It wasn't the end of the world, so let's start with them. Handanovic had a great performance. I think the fact that Spurs drew that match, it was a very good result for Inter. So in that sense, the Spurs draw and Handanovic performance, I'm listing them as winners. Of course, Juve's performance at Old Trafford, like a couple of standouts. We already talked about Chiellini and Bonucci. In a midfield that's been ravaged by injuries, and it was thin to begin with. We had Emre Can and Khedira out. I thought Pjanic, and look, people that follow the podcast know that I think Pjanic is great. I'm maybe not as enamored with him as a lot of other people because I felt like in some of these huge matches, like the one of Old Trafford, he tended not to raise to the level, and he definitely did here. I think he quietly dominated the match, especially in the first half. I thought Blaise Matuidi was sensational, and he was everywhere in that match. It wasn't long ago that some Juve fans were like, geez, we can't get anything better than a PSG reject bench type guy to improve our team. And that looks very different now. So I thought he was great. Also, kudos to Dybala. I thought Ronaldo had a very strong match. Dybala really could have used that goal. So good for him. Good for Allegri for trusting him in that match. Roma, they needed that win. Decisive, really important for Di Francesco, for the morale of the team. They were on a four-game winning streak before the break, lost against Spal. So they recovered well. Dzeko dominates at night. I think the vast majority of his goals at Roma have been in evening games, not just in the Champions League, but also at night. He just seems to do better. There was a former Juve and Roma player called Boniek from the 80s that the Avvocato Agnelli has what he used to say about him. He's bello di notte, handsome at night. That was Zibi Boniek. The lights came on in the stadium. The night games, he was awesome. Some Juve fans, based on some of his quotes, which he's a big Roma fan now, would say bello di notte, stronzo di giorno. If you speak Italian, you know what I mean. But Dzeko, sensational in that game. He needs, though, to keep that up also in Serie A. We also want to give a shout-out to keeper Olsen, another clean sheet. Look, he's been shaky at times, but he was really good in this game. He's had, I think, John Solano has been complimenting him a lot. Also, shout-out to Santon, who made his first CL start in 7 years. He has actually been quite good for Roma. A lot of people made fun of him being in the Nainggolan deal, but he's done well. For Napoli, we already acknowledged Koulibaly and Ancelotti, definite winners. Fabian Ruiz had another really good game. You mentioned Insigne coming back with a big goal. Mertens played well, of course. Hamsik, who I've been critical of, I thought was really, really good, especially in the first half. And I got to give another huge shout out to Alan. On this podcast, I feel like this is one thing we've been ahead of the curve. You and I have been talking about him as one of the very best midfielders in Serie A. And right now, especially with Milinkovic-Savic having a down season, you could say he probably is. I wonder, you know, if PSG was just like, since De Laurentiis was there, if they already made him an offer, like an indecent offer of 100 million. Because imagine Alan on PSG. I mean, that's exactly what they lack. So Alan, really, really great match. He's been unbelievable this season. There's no other way to put it. As far as the losers for Inter, Skriniar definitely struggled in that match. The silver lining, maybe it's a good thing that he struggled in such a high-profile game. We know he's been linked to a lot of big clubs abroad. Hopefully for Inter fans, people look at that and they'll lay off. Still a fantastic player. Asamoah struggled recently the past few matches. I thought he got off to an amazing start at Inter. Not too great the past few matches. Also, the Rafinha deal, you know, he came back to haunt them with the goal de Lex. I think a lot of people saw that one coming. I hope you guys are sitting down. My hot take is I think Inter would have been better off keeping Rafinha than doing the Nainggolan deal. That's just my take. I hope Nainggolan proves me wrong. You know, I thought when he's played, he's been pretty good, but not surprisingly, he's been struggling with injuries. So those are our winners and losers. Now let's pivot to Serie A. I was hoping to have our friend Thousand Names on the podcast because I wanted to ask him to make some predictions on top of the games, but maybe we'll do that very soon. So you guys know how we roll with this by now. I ask Thousand Names to pick three games. I don't tell him which ones. He sends them over to me. And then I make the picks as well, knowing his, but he gets to pick the game. So the first one, we actually have some good games this weekend. Inter travels to the Olimpico to play Lazio, the scene of that amazing last game to end the season last year. Thousand Names has Inter winning 1-0, goal by Icardi. And the comment is, once again, a key match against an opponent for a spot in the Champions League that Inzaghi loses. Milinkovic-Savic, even more embarrassing. And once again, Spalletti's good luck saves him. In Italian, Lazio-Inter 0-1. Icardi, ennesimo scontro diretto perso da Inzaghi. Milinkovic-Savic, sempre più imbarazzante. Il culo di Spalletti continua. So, interesting match. Inter, you know, was on a big winning streak, and I wrote about him for The Athletic this week. Lazio's been up and down. Lazio has no draws this season. They have 6 wins, 3 losses in Serie A. I'm going to say that this is going to be the first match that's a draw. I'm going to have it as 1-1, and I'm going to give a goal to my boy Milinkovic-Savic, and I'm going to give a goal to Politano, who I have to say has impressed me at Inter. A better play. I got to say, I think he's been quite good for them. So next match, and this is the Sunday evening match, Roma traveling to Napoli. Ooh, big, big game. So Thousand Names has Napoli winning 1-0. He's based in Naples, so not too surprising. So he has a goal by Callejon that Di Francesco continues to make his critics laugh at him. He says that Di Francesco, unless he has the good fortune that he's had in the Champions League, he would have already been sacked years ago. And he said Monchi's transfer market has been disastrous. In Italian, Napoli Roma 1-0. Calleon, Di Francesco continua a far ridere. Allenatore che senza il culo in Champions sarebbe stato esonerato un anno fa. Mercato di Monchi disastroso. This is another tough one for me. I'm going to go draw. Maybe it feels like a cop-out. You know, Napoli, really big game in Paris. I'm going to give Roma a vote of confidence. I'm going to have it 1-1. I'll have Zeko and a goal by my boy Milik. What do you have on this one, Alex? I got to put you on the spot. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, David, honestly, I think the good times are going to keep rolling for Napoli. I am impressed with what Roma did midweek, but with that said, I have Napoli winning 2-1. And you know what? I'm going to start embracing maybe my favorite player in Serie A more. Maybe he's my second favorite player. Let's be real. Alexandro's my favorite player. But I love Lorenzo Insigne, and he's just been in dazzling form all season. I think he gets another goal. And sooner or later, by the way, I know you didn't ask me this, he is going to pass Piontek in goals.
Okay, I like it. Okay, so last one. 1,000 names picked Torino and the Fiorentina match. 1-1 goals by Belotti and Simeone. The comment is, the return of the Rooster isn't enough for Mazzarri, and that Cholito is going to dedicate the goal to his father. This is I'm going to have Torino winning. I'm going to be bold. Sorry to our friends at Viola News that follow. They love it when we're positive on Fiorentina. But Torino's been pretty enigmatic for me this season. They have talent. They spent a lot. And I'm going to give them a vote of confidence. I'm going to have Torino 2-0. I'm going to give Belotti a goal. He sure needs it. And Iago Falque, who's been in great form. So as always, I love when our listeners tweet us their picks as well. So send them along. So speaking of our... a couple of other matches I wanted to tell you about this weekend. Juve travels to Tuscany to face Empoli. Milan at home against Sampdoria, a very important match with Gattuso, which we'll get to on the Twitter questions. As always, we love getting questions on Serie A, the Champions League, transfers, podcasting, journalism, TV, music, film, you name it. Just use the CalcioLand hashtag and we'll read it on the pod. So, Alex, which ones are we going to go over today?
All right, David, let's keep the Chiellini chatter going. Where do you rank Chiellini amongst the great Italian defenders? And also, what about the duo of Chiellini and Bonucci?
Wow, this is a tough one, and I've been thinking a lot about it. So when I think of Chiellini's legacy, I think two things kind of hurt the way he's perceived. A, he's never played on a great Italy. So I think he's the best Italian defender since the World Cup in 2006, which, of course, we had Cannavaro, Nesta, Materazzi, and I don't want to put him on the level of those players, but he was a very important player on that team. I think he's the best since then. Barzagli, I think this late phase of his career might be maybe overshadowing how good he was, but I think Chiellini is definitely the best since then. But he's never played for a transcendent Italy. Yeah, they made the Euro final with Prandelli. They had that good run with Conte. But when you think of like the great Italian defenders, you think of like the teams that have won World Cups or went on deep runs. So I think he's the best, since 2006. I think the other thing too is Chiellini at Juve, except for the years that Ibrahimovic and Cavani was there. There wasn't, great competition for him individually, striker-wise. Like, there is more now, but in the prime of his career. And two, once Juve wasn't very good for a while, and then Juve became so good and really had no great opponent as a team. So I think that has hurt his legacy a little bit. But there's a big but. If Chiellini lifts the Champions League trophy as Juve's captain to win the Champions League, ooh, I think his legacy goes up a lot. I even wonder if we start saying, start talking about Nesta and Chiellini, because look, Nesta wasn't a big part of the World Cup team. Granted, he was a fantastic defender on the Milans and the Lazio teams that were really good. But I got to wonder if Chiellini starts, with the Champions League, if we start talking about him. I think Cannavaro, the captain of a World Cup team, he's going to be kind of on another level. Old school players, I think of Chiellini a lot, like with Claudio Gentile, who was on the 82 team, like an old school man-marking defender, very, very tough player. His duels with Maradona were pretty legendary. So right now, I kind of have Chiellini on the Gentile level and just a notch below the Nestas and the Cannavaros. So I'm curious, and definitely Baresi, Maldini, players like that, definitely a notch above Chiellini, but I think he's like on the tier right below that. So I'm curious to see what our listeners think. I have a feeling there'll be some, especially Milan fans, that I'm curious to see what they have to say. I'm going to leave it at that. As far as the duo Chiellini-Bonucci, A very intriguing duo because they complement each other so well. Bonucci, of course, with his great passing. And again, he's been responsible for a lot of goals. I don't think his defending is nearly as bad as what you read on Twitter. We had that performance at Old Trafford. I also remember those matches against Barcelona in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, how incredible he was defensively there. So they're really, really intriguing duo. I'm going to go back to Gentile and Shiraz, a really good duo on Italy and Juve. Can kind of see a little bit of a comparison to that. I definitely, if you told me, better duos to me in my lifetime, definitely Maldini and Baresi. I'm on the camp that I think Baresi was even better than Maldini. I know not a lot of people would agree with that, but as a duo, to me, that is the quintessential one. But Bonucci-Chiellini is a really, really good one. And again, I think we're going to be talking about their legacy very differently if Juve can win the Champions League with them playing a key part on it.
All right, for this next Twitter question, I like one of the players mentioned, but I absolutely loathe one of the teams mentioned. David, if Marcelo joins Juve, would Alexandro be a good fit at Man City?
So this is totally hypothetical because I don't see Marcelo going to Juve, but hey, I didn't believe CR7 was going to Juve even in the morning that the deal was announced. So what do I know? So let's make it, though, hypothetical. Look, it's interesting because Man City was very close to signing Alexandro when Juve got him from Porto. They were like the final two teams finalists. Juve actually surprisingly went above and beyond. And I think they convinced them that he would have a more certain role at Juve. And look, Alexandro's been a little bit better this season than he was last season, but he's not the player that Juve originally bought. But I'd be very intrigued to see what he does for Guardiola. And look, I say it all the time, left back to me is the scarcest position on the transfer market. So someone like Alexandro is always going to have a lot of value in market because there's just not that many better, even though he hasn't been himself in the past few years. So, yeah, I think he'd be a great fit at Man City. But, interesting to me is, my perception of Juve on the transfer market ever since Ronaldo is just very different. In the past, I always assumed there'd be one or two big-name players leaving Juve every summer because of the will of the player and Juve trying to finance their incoming moves with a big sale. But now I look at Juve very differently, and I look at Alexandro potentially leaving as Juve saying, you know what, we can get someone that's better than this version. So I just perceive Juve on the transfer market radically different than it did in the past.
And just to add on, sure, theoretically, Alexandro would be a good fit with Pep Guardiola, but they have Benjamin Mendy at left back, who's leading the Premier League in assists. So thankfully, I can say I don't see that happening. All right, moving on to the next Twitter question. Should Milan replace Gattuso with Donadoni?
So I don't get it. Is there like a rule that Milan can only hire one of their former players? Because it seems this is the only thing they do. The only real candidates even linked to the jobs are former Milan players. And we've had, this is now the third administration. We had Berlusconi, Galliani. We had the fake Chinese there for a little while. And then now we have the Elliott Fund, Maldini, Leonardo. And, there's a lot of reports. We don't have it on Di Marzio's side, but there's a lot of chatter of Donadoni potentially coming on. The agent Branchini, who represents Montolivo, has been a lot of rumors on him being involved, pushing for Donadoni there. And, what I always say is, it's always very easy to sack a manager. And I've been on the camp that Gattuso earned the right to start the season, and it's been up and down. There's not that consistency that we'd expect from Milan at this point, but I'm not a believer that you should change just for the sake of change. I don't really see Donadoni as a very slight upgrade on Gattuso, so I really don't see the point. I would say Paulo Sousa would maybe be another potential candidate, and he's not a former Milan player, so you got to wonder if they'd even consider him. I don't see him. I'm not a fan. I don't see him as an upgrade. So I don't know. To me, obviously, it's like kind of Conte or someone like Jardin. Like, that would be an upgrade. But it sounds like Conte is going to, sit out the season to try to get Chelsea's money. I don't see him taking over a team midseason. Maybe Real Madrid is an exception because they are Real Madrid. But to me, it's like, if Milan, if they're going to get rid of Gattuso, it's got to be for someone like really better. When I look at like the teams that are better than them in Serie A right now, you would probably take their manager over Gattuso, no questions asked. So, no, I'm not in favor of this switch. Let's see what happens. I still hope Gattuso turns around, but we'll see. I think this match against Sampdoria is going to be very important for him. I don't think he'll be sacked if they don't win, but I think at that point the pressure would be pretty big.
All right, David, staying on managers, do you think Arsene Wenger could fit into Serie A?
Well, I should almost, we should almost ask you, Alex, because you know more than me. I mean, my gut reaction is in this current Serie A, which is much more offensive than it was in years past, like scoring goals, I think he might actually be a better fit than a few years ago when it was a bit more defensive and like it's still tactical now, but in a different way. So I don't know. I'd be kind of intrigued to see him there. I'm not sure what type of role he wants next, like more a director role or a coaching job. But I don't know. I'd kind of like to see it. How do you feel about that one, Alex?
Yeah, I actually think it's a good point, David, based on the style that Serie A plays now, he might fit in better. And I actually kind of agree with that. I know he hasn't hung it up officially, but if you're a club, do you really want to hire him? I mean, how much would he have 2 feet in? Does he have a lot left in the tank? Does he want to manage for a long time? At this point, at least personally, I don't want managers who are just at least on the surface going to be there for a year or two. Now, at Chelsea, it just seems like they can only keep managers for 2 years, but at least going into it, I want to feel like there's a little bit more of a long-term plan. But maybe if you want like Arsene Wenger to get you out of a ditch, if you want him to normalize a club, you want him to restore order. I mean, he's not really good at that actually from a personal level, but I mean, it's not a terrible hire. I just wouldn't do it if it was my club because I just don't know how committed he would be. But maybe not a bad fit, as you said, based on style. David, I love this Twitter question next. All right, David, there's a big Celtics game on TV at the same time of Padova playing a team in Coppa Italia. What are you watching?
Yeah, so the question was even like, you know, like a top team, like Padova playing Juve or what, something like that. It's a simple answer for me, like Padova, no questions asked, because they're just not that many games. I'm not a big illegal stream type of guy. It's very hard for me to watch Padova in the first place. Like, I have all my friends there keeping me updated on how they're doing it. So if there was an opportunity, no questions asked. Luckily, as a Celtics fan, we are in a lot of big games with the Celtics. So it would be, you know, Padova would be so much rarer that it would be that way. I have to say those are, you know, in a lot of ways, I've lost a lot of my fandom as I get older. I don't have much time. I used to be a big Yankee fan in baseball. I used to really follow the Giants and the NFL. I just don't have the time anymore. In Serie A, I've become, you know, really pretty neutral. People think it's an act, but it's really not. But I still have passion for Padova and the Celtics. I mean, I'm still a diehard Celtics fan. We're not off to the greatest start of the season, but I also have to say I'm really enjoying the Lakers struggling despite the fact that I like LeBron. So that's where I really feel like a fan. And this is a good question because it's also kind of a good segue to the next one, which is pretty controversial. So what's the last question of the podcast, Alex?
All right, David. All right, I'm laughing just reading this. Do you agree that there are different levels of being a supporter, all to be respected, but that we cannot deny the great difference between a local since the early days and recent global fan?
Okay, so for those of you that had kind of teased that up front, I'm pretty sure, Alex, this one came from your one of your most recent videos. And correct me if I'm wrong, this was a Twitter video. This wasn't your YouTube channel, right? That's what it was, the Twitter one?
Yeah, yesterday I released a video on supporting local.
Okay, so this is also a good reminder. Like last week, I went to see Nine Inch Nails, Jesus and Mary Chain opening for them. And, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, Alex, you're really, really, really exploding. Like now your videos are like becoming questions on the podcast. And back in the day, Nine Inch Nails used to open for Jesus and Mary Chains. And now tables have flipped. And maybe someday that's going to be this on the podcast or on another project. But that aside, I thought that video was really interesting. And here's my take. At the end of the day, maybe it's because I've become older. And to be honest, I'm kind of fed up with all the Twitter debates. Like, yeah, I've written a ton of tweets in my life, like as I was building my base, but you don't see me on there that much anymore in the debates. Because to me, it's really simple. Like for me, it's like, Live and let live. You want to be a fan, you support your team, that's great. What someone else does and the debates on what's a better league and who's a better fan, like, to me, that's not that important anymore. But, you know, and I think, you know, it's very tempting to generalize, but I know plenty of fans that are, like, incredibly knowledgeable and are incredibly passionate that for a variety of reasons have never had the opportunity to go to the stadium of the team that they support. So I don't really make that distinction. Now, do I think a fan, like, you know, that has season tickets goes to every game? And I think more than, like, knowledge and support, I think, you know, watching a game in person, you kind of pick up on a lot of things that you don't on TV. But as far as, like, you know, is there, like, a hierarchy? I'm not a big fan of that. Like, to me, that comes off as, like, maybe a little bit insecure that you feel like you have to, like, rank yourself compared to another fan. This is, too, what I feel about people, like, constantly saying, oh, the league that I watch is better than yours. Like, whatever, live and let live. So that's kind of my take. But again, if I really had to answer it, I don't want to generalize too much because, again, I know plenty of fans that go to, like, every game that support their team, and they're not very good fans. Just like I know fans that have never been there and who are great fans. Guys that, you know, literally do a lot to promote the brand for their club, you know, it being on social media. And also, let's try maybe a good New Year resolution. The New Year's coming up for all of us. Let's try to, like, live and let live. And I try to rank each other so much. So that's my take. Alex, your video was really good. So kind of, like, give us a, let's close it with kind of what your take was on all that.
Yeah, I think you said it well, David. Don't rank fans. For me, there are so many things in life, and I said this at the end of the video, there are so many things in life, David, that we need a certain amount of credentials for. You need to be this, this, and this to have this job. You got to do 4 years of college and graduate school to do this. There are so many things where you have to show identification. You have to show some type of proof that, yes, you're credible enough to get this or to be this. You don't need that with a fan. To be a fan of something, it just means how do you feel towards what you're being a fanatic of? In this case, it's a sports team. It's a club. If you love the club, that's all you need to know. That is all you need to know. No one should ever be starting or ending a sentence with, well, we value these fans more. No, being a fan is not about value. It's not about ranking. It's just about your pure love for this, in this case, the club. So I think it's just petty to talk about different ranks of fans. And that's coming, David, from someone who grew up in Boston and who is an avid Boston sports fan. And I'm a nerd with it, but I don't judge someone if they go to a Red Sox game, it's their first time ever, and they say they're a big Red Sox fan. All that matters is we're fans together. I know it sounds corny, but that's what I believe.
Yeah, well said. Okay, guys, so this is the show for the week. I want to thank everyone that sent questions. Keep them coming. I'm going to try to bring in some new guests and a return guest that I've been working really hard to bring back on. So, you know, keep sending us questions with the Couch of Lamb hashtag. If you have ideas on a guest you'd like to hear on the podcast, do that. We appreciate your support with that. And also, you know, if you dig the podcast, please let your friends know about it with some retweets or tweeting about it. We love the reviews. They keep growing on iTunes. Search for Calcioland on the podcast app and drop us 5 stars. It helps more than you think. Leave us a comment. We read them all. We've gotten some great ones. So thanks for your support, and we look forward to chatting next week.